Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello and you're very welcome to this bonus episode of Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe together with Guinness.
Earlier on today, I caught up with Andrew Conway.
But before that, we're going to show you this bonus interview that Rob O'Hanrahan did with Brian O'Driscoll.
Honestly, I can't actually stand over the quality of the Andrew Conway interview just yet because I was telling lies. We haven't met him yet.
But we will. And it will be good.
I'd say so.
Yeah. Penguin noise.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Brian, let's get straight into it. This is the 20th year of the Six Nations, and of course, that was your first year coming in 2000. Very different Ireland squad. It was maybe a mix of the kind of old amateurs and then young lads like yourself coming through. Can you tell us a little bit about what that dynamic was like?
I think there's always so much excitement around the Guinness Six Nations when it launches. I think it's the envy of the world from an international competition, an annual competition, and it's such a tough competition to win. And I go back to when I came in initially in 99 and then properly in 2000, Ireland wasn't in a great spot. We had a really disappointing 1990s, and it was the beginning of that new crop of players coming through. And I think it's just about marrying the old with the new. You have to hold on to a certain amount of experience, but then bring through that new blood to be able to play with the freedom that only young people can. So I think that's what Andy Farrell is looking at in this Six Nations. And I'm sure he'll get that combination right.
Yeah, you talked before about Leinster pre-Michael Checa of getting changed in the back of cars or the boot of cars. And was there any kind of that kind of element to Irish international rugby back then, which maybe seems so alien now?
Well, you look at the quality of the training pitches that we would have trained on. Out in Nace, even though they were giving us their first pitch, in the depths of winter, it would have been badly cut up and you would have been moving around at different times trying to find the best track within close proximity of the hotel, where that's all changed. Now you look at the quality of the training pitches, be it in Carton House or the new training facility, indoor, a full pitch where it doesn't matter what weather there is outside. Those sort of things definitely enhance your performance and give you an opportunity to prepare a little bit better. So, yeah, the game has come an awful long way in 20 years' time. I only turned professional in 96. So it's still relatively much in its infancy, but the progression has been phenomenal. And now I think we're a very professional outfit here in Ireland.
Your first Six Nations in 2000, you scored tries against Scotland and Italy. But I think what every Irish fan remembers is that hat-trick against France. Is that something that must stand out for you when you think about it? Is there one of those three tries that maybe stands out to you in particular?
I think the third try is maybe the one that stands out because it was the important one that got us back in the lead. The others were just keeping us in the hunt. But then, the third one, I didn't pay much heed to the fact that it was a hat-trick. I just knew that we were back in the game, and it's not somewhere where Ireland had really been in the game on 60, 70 minutes for the previous 25 odd years. We were usually blown away and finished comfortably second in a two-horse race, where all of a sudden we were in the mix and we had a chance of doing something that we'd really struggled to do for a long time. So, yeah, I think the seriousness of the occasion probably hit me on that third one.
Yeah. The cycling forward a few years to 2009, I think it's not only a great Irish moment in the Six Nations, but just a great Six Nations moment was Ronan O'Gara's drop goal. What are your memories of that? Like being on the pitch, like you're looking up at the clock, obviously, and there was a Wales penalty to come and everything else. But when that went over, was there a beginning of like, okay, we're going to do this? Or was there like, right, we've only got 3 minutes on the clock now to see it out?
When it went over, I think we thought, we just have to be able to see it out now. And all you can think about is that next moment is trying to regather the kickoff. There's every likelihood that they're going to go short and try and regain the ball back themselves rather than kick deep. So you know the things that are likely to come at you, and then to be able to deal with that pressure situation. It's miles easier playing than it is watching in those environments. And then when they did get the ball back, it was just about trusting our defensive system and trying to talk to one another about not giving away a penalty. And alas, we did. And then I thought, you know, God, what a kick in the teeth that is. We'll still win the championship on points difference, but it'll feel like a hollow victory because we want that elusive Grand Slam. And thankfully, the kick went a meter short.
Miles easier playing than watching. That's really interesting. So is it just the fact that you're in the zone, or is it that maybe as a spectator you get to see so much more of what's happening?
You can't have any effect on the game as a spectator, whereas as a player, you know, you have ownership of what happens. And yes, it's a team sport, but you know, you're a link in that chain to be able to get that job done. And be it, you know, you can make a tackle or you can have an impact in attack that could be the difference between winning and losing a game. And having that control is something that I've missed as an injured player, or, you know, less so as a retired player. But certainly when, you know, throughout your professional career, when you haven't been able to play a game for one reason or another, it's a tough place to be, and the stresses are far more accentuated in the stands than they are out on the pitch, for sure.
One man who has to, I suppose, get used to that for the first time in a long time is Rob Kearney. He hasn't made the Irish squad for the first time in a long, long time. You shared a lot of big days in green and in blue with him. He kind of, I suppose, after such a decorated international career, may have played his last game in an Irish jersey without any kind of fanfare.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the common denominator for all of Ireland's success in the last 10 or 11 years, it's pretty much been him. You know, both New Zealand test matches, series win in Australia, Grand Slams, you know, big performances against England. He's been there for nearly all of them. And, you know, to have that rock at fullback and ability to beat that first line of defence in counter-attack as well. Maybe he now, you know, more recent years, hasn't been lauded the way he should be. He's, you know, one of Ireland's great fullbacks and one of Ireland's great players. And, you know, I think the most decorated, I think he tells the lads in Leinster the whole time, he's the most decorated Irish rugby player of all time. But the reality is he is. And that's tough at 98 caps to be... kind of what appears to be frozen out or to be not selected, and that can't have been easy to take. But God, he's produced many, many big days and many big performances, particularly when there were doubts around him. So you never know, he might get another opportunity over the course of the next 6 or 7 weeks with the need for experience or through injuries. So kind of hang in there and stay fit and stay positive if you do get that chance.
Yeah, and we've seen that, I suppose, with the likes of Devon Toner and Jack McGrath coming back into the squad. But what interests me about Rob in particular is that as a specialist 15, they're so rare now. Like of the 16 backs that Andy Farrell picked, I think 7 of them can play a fullback, but none of them are a dedicated fullback, maybe. Will Addison is probably the only one who plays there week in, week out. Is it going to be a case of maybe eating bread is soon forgotten and we'll only realise how important Rob Kearney was to Ireland, he's not there?
Yeah, and sometimes it is, you know, you're not fully, with some players, you know, something you're not fully appreciated until you're gone, and so, you know, what's missing. His ability to dominate the air, I think any player will struggle to be as impressive in that regard of his game. And when the game goes to a more kicking focus, that's, you know, where he came into his own. But defensively, very, very solid as well. Grass, ability to cover grass in the backfield. I don't know too many other 15s who were capable of playing the way he did. So, I think there's a lot to be thankful for. We had, you know, great years and great memories with him. He's still in there. The issue is being an out-and-out fullback is you're not a brilliant 23-man player. You know, it's either you're in the starting 15 or you tend to be on the periphery, a bit like as an out-and-out 13. So, he'll keep his fingers crossed that another opportunity will present itself, because I'm sure he's got future Ireland aspirations still. He's a hungry guy.
One final question, and this will be going out on our House of Rugby podcast, which of course is Gerry Flanagan and Andrew Trimble, two guys who you would have shared quite a lot of time with on the pitch. My question to you is that if you had to room with one of those two, or if you could choose which one, who would it be and why?
Of Fla and...
Fla and Trimby. Which one would you not want to?
Both very different. I think both would be... I'm probably expected to bag both of them, but I don't think I can. I think both good conversationalists, both quirky. Trims has really come out of himself the first... since retirement, or even since he met Anna, I think that was a revolutionary experience in his life. So, yeah, both give good value. Both say it as it is. Probably Fla's a bit more scathing or a bit more cutting, but that's okay too. Honesty is the best policy. So it's a toss-up. I think... Can we get a three bed in there?
We might be able to sort something out. Brian, thanks so much for your time today. I really, really appreciate
nice
it.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
I'm here with the very energy conscious Andrew Conway, ambassador for Pinergy. Do you want to sell Pinergy to us very quickly?
So Pinergy is doing free Fridays throughout 2020. So you can, if you're a Pinergy customer, you can charge your car free of charge on Fridays. And it's pretty impressive.
Very good.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
You've obviously done a few of these before.
Yeah, I have.
So welcome along to Baz and Andrews, House of Rugby.
Thank you.
A household brand, I'm sure you're familiar.
Oh yeah, big fan. Where's Baz, sorry?
Baz had to get back. The twins have an appointment.
Fair enough.
Tell me, what way does this work? Because I've been here a couple of things. It was Raj last week. And how early are these appointments set up? Or is it the case of you play really well at the weekend and you say, right, I want some interviews.
I want some work Monday morning.
Straight away.
No, it's not. No, because even it's set up a couple of weeks ago and then you're thinking, leaning to the game, geez, I hope Saturday goes well, or I'm going to have to come in and be talking a lot of rope on Monday morning. So it's a couple of weeks out. So give me a bit of time to prepare.
Yeah, grand. Well, perfect timing. Anyway, things went well. We're flying again.
I don't know about that. That's the danger where you think you have one good win. Now, we had a good win against Scotland that was kind of undervalued because we played against a sticky Scottish team that made it look ugly, and that's what they're good at. And now we beat a good Welsh team. And we're now back flying. So I don't necessarily agree with either of those narratives. They're both, you have to remain somewhere in the middle, as you know, without getting too far ahead of yourself after a good win or getting too down on yourself after what was a good win in the first game. But it didn't seem to tick a lot of people's boxes in the media. It's been a good start. It's been two tough games, two proper test matches and two wins. So we'll take it.
Yeah, and then obviously a bit of momentum for the team, but for you personally, a nice bit of momentum. I think if you start this weekend or next weekend against England, that'll be your third, the first time you've ever started three test matches for Ireland in a row, I believe. I haven't done the research. I just get spoon fed that.
I was already asked that today. That's an interesting stat as a 28-year-old. It is what it is. I wouldn't be too concerned with looking at how many consecutive starts I'll have. It's if I get the opportunity to play, obviously it would be brilliant. But there's obviously a bit of time to go before those decisions are made.
Yeah, but it's a sign of kind of how you've gone, and you look over the last two games, you've looked more and more comfortable. Even throughout the World Cup friendlies, going through the World Cup, any opportunity you've got, you've gone really well. It just looks like you're kind of brimming with confidence, and then getting selected again. I mean, you're bound to be quite confident that you're going to, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, you're confident you're going to be selected again, but it just looks like things are going great for you, and you seem to be kind of feeding into that confidence as well. You're playing with your tail up.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's a lot of work has gone into it over the last few years, not just kind of since the World Cup since the pre-season, but over a probably 4 or 5 year period, I actively changed my approach to rugby and put more of a holistic effort into getting better. And I think over it, slowly but surely, you start seeing a couple of results here, a couple of results there. And then whenever you get opportunities, you're ready. You're as ready as you can be to take them. And then it's not down to you, the player on the day, to take them. And just got to keep doing that and keep growing and keep working hard and keep enjoying my rugby. And that's, if I do that, then you're on the right track, I suppose.
Yeah, so more holistic approach. What does that look like practically?
Doing a few bits, meditating, doing a few, writing down a couple of affirmations to kind of make yourself accountable to have the work rate you need or you want to have to continue to excel.
Yeah. So did you sit down with someone? Did you create a plan, or did you just kind of discover this is working for me? I feel good going in.
A bit of both. I can't actually remember how I kind of got around into it, but Enda McNulty was really helpful along the way, bouncing ideas off him. I found it a bit myself. Used Enda as a sounding board to kind of give me a bit of direction in that side of things. Obviously, he's vastly experienced and he's been a nut job, so he was a good man to talk to. And then just talking to teammates, having chats with guys along the way, seeing what me sharing what I'm doing, getting ideas off what other guys are doing, and then putting them into practice. Some stuff is crap, and you leave it at that. And then other stuff go, okay, I actually feel better off that. I feel if I do a bit of meditation, I feel good. So yeah. Then that. You'll find different avenues then to keep adding.
Yeah, it's mad how the culture of a rugby team has changed over the last 15 years. Mm. Can you imagine if you said to Peter Clawlessy, oh, I'm doing a bit of
funny you
meditation.
Say that. Very funny you say that, because Peter Clawlessy's wife, Anna, is a Reiki instructor, and I used to go out to their house to do Reiki, which is like it's like an energy, you're going to catch me out here. It's working on your energy chakras, I suppose, and kind of clearing energy chakras so you're aligned is the simplest, easiest way to describe it. But it was in his house, so I'd pull up to his house and I'd be going into the room with his wife, and he'd be looking at me going, who is your man? And I wasn't up to too much at the time either, so yeah, I know it's changed. It's definitely changed.
Yeah, so it's the same kind of, I know J.O. Jason Carman would have led mindfulness sessions, mindfulness meditation. What was that one called again?
The mindfulness.
No, the one you said the McClaw's.
Oh, the Reiki. Sorry, the Reiki. Yeah.
Is it all the same sort of thing?
Similar, yeah. It's just about Well, I suppose mindfulness is just clearing your mind, and Reiki would be about specifically about energy and different energy points across your body and clearing them. So J.O.'s kind of first person I experienced in rugby to go down that route, and some people like it, some people don't, so it's not necessarily for everyone. But if you're into that and you're looking to gain an edge in different ways, then having a try off, that's no harm.
So it wasn't commercially minded from your perspective, thinking if I get into Reiki, energy efficiency, I might get a deal with Penergy.
No, not quite. Didn't think that far ahead.
So obviously, like as you say, 28, and it's been a long time coming. You've been kind of banging on the door. Obviously, a lot of competition, a lot of guys going well. But you've been banging on the door for a while. Little bit of a, obviously, difficult kind of early 20s, maybe, moving on from Leinster. I can't remember you going badly for Leinster. Certainly not badly enough to have to move provinces. But it seems like you've just rediscovered yourself. Tell us about that process of deciding to move somewhere else.
Yeah, I actually nearly went to Munster straight out of school for whatever reason. I was a bit of a Munster fan growing up. Used to go to some of the European games with my dad, and me and him went down to Limerick when I was still in sixth year and had a look. Went around the campus, and then we actually went into the last Limerick or the last Munster game of the season, one of the Pro 14 or whatever it was at the time, Magners League, and Munster in all their wisdom brought me into the box where the academy lads were having a
to brainwash you.
No, where the academy lads were having their end of year night out. So I walked in with my dad, like 17-year-old coming down from Dublin, and the lads were all on the lash and did not make me feel welcome at all.
Oh, really? No,
well, just like they were, because obviously I know a few of most of the lads now, just like, who's your man? What's he doing here? You know, it's not necessarily the most welcoming per se back then. Anyway, Felix had obviously just done it, and they don't necessarily like the Dublin lads coming down or the Leinster lads coming down. So driving back, I was like, right, I don't think I'll do that. So it stayed in Leinster for the first 3 years academy, and then 3 years with the senior team. And like you said, it wasn't necessarily going bad. It's only 21 when I decided to move. I just had a good feeling, to be honest. The Munster option came up, and I just had a gut feeling to go. Issa even called me aside when I was telling him I was thinking of leaving. He said, listen, I'm retiring at the end of the year. This is when he retired the first time. I'm retiring at the end of the year. Like, there's going to be more opportunities for you. And I said, listen, it's actually not about that. It's just about, I'm just going with my gut here and I feel like it's the right thing to do. And now it wasn't an immediate success. The first year was a very tough year. We had a few injuries, didn't go well in a lot of my opportunities. And I think even looking back now, I was almost naive to the fact that if that didn't go well over the first 2 years, you're now kind of 22, 23. There's other guys who are going to be coming up, homegrown guys in your position. You'll be out the door pretty quickly. So I didn't think about it in those terms. Luckily, the following year started quite well and continued on from there. But yeah, it was an interesting move. On paper, it probably didn't make much sense to anyone except for me, but I just kind of felt like it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, and then you're saying, obviously, the Munster guys mightn't have been that fond of Leinster guys coming up the road.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you had to make more effort to kind of buy into what they're looking to do?
100%, you had to prove yourself on the pitch, and that was probably one of the problems in the first year. I thought that I had a few niggles at the time. It just wasn't gelling properly, and I thought that I had to continue staying out in the pitch and not actually being smart about it and getting myself right and then going when I was right. I thought if I was missing a session here or missing a session there, I was going to be, the lads are going to think I wasn't up for it. And then that, whenever you're kind of not doing those bits and pieces right, then you start running into problems with, you're not playing where you need to be playing at, you're not training, you're training pretty poorly, various kind of problems you run into. And that was definitely a learning curve that first year.
Yeah, Grant. So anyway, let's get into now. Six Nations, Ireland, things going well. Obviously new scenery within camp with Andy Farrell. Joe was obviously a big fan of yours. I think he rated you pretty highly. I think you seem to do really well in that environment. But you've done even better in this environment. What's the difference? Is it, I mean, for me, whenever I think of an environment with Joe in charge, it makes me I get nervous, like, straight away. I get anxious, and I'm thinking in particular of Wednesday night walkthroughs.
Yeah.
If you think test match is intense, you should go to a Wednesday night walkthrough.
I know.
It was frightening. Yeah. And then there's all this nervous energy, and then afterwards you just kind of relax. And, but to be fair, I've never known a game plan better.
You had to, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you had to.
You had to, otherwise it's just so embarrassing to get it wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
But is there equivalent with Farrell?
No, I'd say there's just as much pressure to know your stuff. It's not Joe's gone, right, lads, we can be looser with the detail. That's not the case, but maybe it's a bit more player driven, I suppose. If guys decide you don't know your stuff, which hasn't happened yet, it's not going to be acceptable to when you're playing for Ireland. That's just not, it's not going to be good enough. So there's definitely been tweaks here and there. There's probably a bit more of a conscious effort to have a bit of crack, enjoy each other's company a bit more, have a bit of crack after training, like getting lads to have drop goal competitions. It's just
how does Farrell implement that? Does he just let it happen, like, naturally, or does he say to a couple of lads, listen, I want a slightly more relaxed vibe, a relaxed atmosphere at training? How does he practice?
I don't know, to be honest. I'd say, he's definitely within the leadership group, they've had a chat. Maybe I'm having a punt here, but get the players feel on what they think needed to be tweaked a bit, because at the end of the day, it's the lads, it's the players who have to go out on the pitch, it's the players who are going to be driving the standards whenever the pressure comes on in big test matches. And if we don't feel the responsibility, and if we don't feel like we're the ones that the buck stops with, then it's not done really right. So having the responsibility across the board, not just from your leaders, but from 1 to 15, 1 to 23, to know their stuff, to be, say like we're looking to do a bit of kick, we kicked a bit from the edge there the last day, and just having that from a winger going, right, if the ball shifts to me and we're in our 22, that the probability is, if there's space in the backfield, I need to find it, not just, all right, I'm gonna have a crack here. It's a bit of a shared responsibility across the board.
Yeah. Tell me about another frightening aspect of Joe's regime, but again, that brought the best out of us, was the 1-2-3-4 drill.
Oh, yeah.
The 1-2-3-4 drill, that's very misleading, calling it that, because that seems simple.
Yeah.
But is there... So obviously Farrell's like, he's nailing the atmosphere piece, being able to express ourselves and internally and kind of slightly more relaxed tone. But whenever it's time to crack the whip, and I'm sure with Johnny as captain, there's plenty of times where you're going to crack the whip as well. How does he bring that intensity? Is there equivalent of that?
It's probably a bit more mixed. It's not as specific to a drill, I wouldn't think. It's pressurized training moments. So if you're two teams running against each other and one of the teams has a line out, we're working with a real high tempo. When the team has a line out and they mess it up, onto the next one, turnover. Do you know what I mean? This is a knock on, turnover. It's probably not as reset orientated. This is what a rugby match is going to be like. There's going to be mistakes, there's going to be errors, and you're going to go from attack to defense, kickoffs, everything kind of meshed into one at a really high tempo and a really high expectation of the execution of it all. So yeah, like you're saying, it's probably not as specific to a drill to scare the bejesus out of you as it is an expectation that the standard across the board is really high.
Yeah, well, whatever he's doing, whatever the rest of you are doing, whatever you're doing seems to be working, so long may it continue.
Yeah, nice one.
You were listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.